that feels like a dream that I would have never dreamt of. And I think that's a big thing that we keep saying with this work is I never dreamed this was possible, but now we can, but it's a reality. And now we can start making those dreams more realities. And I'm very grateful for the future work and all that we keep doing. And yeah, I hope that it sparks more joy, more healing, more creativity in our community.
Adrian, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I also want to say Chimigwich Wopita to you, Deanna, Sequoia, Sarah. I also want to say Chimigwich Wopita to First Peoples Fund. We applied for their first ever production grant, and that's what made this production possible, along with Rosie Simas Dance, allowing us and giving us space to rehearse. It really does take community, and I feel really uplifted by that. And I'm looking forward to seeing people. See you at Niche.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best Of.
The Hallucination.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, hit me, cut again.
Because all the hippies are trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we should probably, if we can, get our friend Robert Lilligren on right away and talk about what's going on in the community and all the prayers that are going out there. Robert, if you don't mind, we can get you on a little early tonight.
Sure. Bonjour, Haley. Bonjour, Robert. Yeah, that's fine with me. Whatever works best for you.
Yeah, well, got to see you today, and let me just give you an introduction. Mm-hmm. Robert Lilligren is president and CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And today was, in these last few days, have been really, really hard on community and our relatives. Today was well needed in, I don't know, I heard you on NPR today, and what a great segment, and just love to have you share your thoughts with our community here about our healing process and what's been going down in here in Minneapolis.
Yeah, miigwech, Robert. Thanks for the kind words. I haven't heard the NPR segment, but I said a lot of things that weren't used that are a little hotter maybe and more said in anger. And this is not the time for anger, right? This is the time to come together, you know, heal. And there was a beautiful event today. It was great to see you there. We've had several shootings, for people who don't know, several shootings right in the community. We've lost a lot of Native relatives, young Native relatives. And it's a loss that the Native community here is really feeling. And so today we came together in prayer, in tradition, in spirit of healing, to try to move beyond this. And what made it particularly significant is today is the kickoff of American Indian Month in Minnesota. And so we've had months of planning for a whole day-long celebration, and actually celebrations all month. And so that's what we were ready for. And then last night, community leadership came together and said, we can't celebrate when we're so sad. And so so we came together today in healing, and it was really beautiful. It wasn't what we expected to do today, but it was what we needed to do.
You know, what I really liked, Robert, too, is one of the speakers, one of the elders told us to get closer and feel each other's heart. And that was really powerful.
Yeah. Right. And our revered elder, Sharon Day, said, hug each other. And she was at a meeting last night that community leadership and organizational leadership had with the mayor, not last night, yesterday afternoon, with the mayor, our police chief, and of course they're offering support and things. And she said at the end of that meeting, we all stood up and hugged each other. And she said, I remember thinking, well, we should do this all the time. You know, we should be this close all the time. So that was, one aspect of a really powerful day.
Yeah. I agree. And emotions were high and should have been high, and they were high. And I'm really glad that I made it, because, you know, we have to stand up for our people and our relatives and our young ones and our old ones and show up. And so that was really important for me to be there, you know, Robert. Seeing you and all the Native American Community Development Institute people there, too, is really heartwarming to see.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, we were all set and ready to support Indian Month kickoff. And then we had to pivot to this. And I will tell you, this morning we had conversations amongst our staff. People did not feel safe being there. I heard this a lot from community as well. People fear retaliation and getting caught in crossfire. We were just a block from where the mass shooting took place last night. And so people were frightened. But our staff decided to shoulder to shoulder to go ahead and be supportive. I'm so proud of my coworkers for really stepping up. And to your comment, Robert, about emotions running high, and they were. It was a very emotional day, lots of tears, right? As one of our younger cultural keepers said, your tears are medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And it was needed, and it was, I was like, I always love, and we talk about this too a lot, when we have our leaders there, but not, you know, in the front. They're letting community run the show, and therefore they're there to support. And I really appreciate that.
I love that. I really felt that. The other thing that was really notable for me, or one other thing, was, you know, we had a strong media presence here, right? There were probably 7 TV cameras up, reporters all over the place. And, you know, we did sort of the more public parts. And then when we got to the more prayerful part, you know, our dear sister Carrie Day Aspinwall, you know, made an announcement, you know, please stop filming. And yes. They'd gone around to the move floor and explained to them why that was important. And they did.
Yeah.
They were very respectful. I mean, that, I feel like it would have been different 5 years ago in a setting like that. It would have been much more angry, for one thing, than sort of loving. But I feel like the media wouldn't have been that respectful in responses. So I give them credit.
You know, that's funny you should say that, because one of the area stations that not always is very nice to Native Americans were there. And I went up to the reporter and said, I appreciate you, and I appreciate, you know, how you go about things, and I'm glad you're here. And he really liked to hear that too. But there are good people out in the media, and there are not good people out in the media too. So it's always good to praise. And it's a really good point what you brought up about them being respectful.
Right. And you know how it is at our organization, Native American Community Development Institute, we're kind of higher profile. So media comes to us a lot. And then, you know, we kind of direct them to the best community voice to be talking to. But because community knows that, I heard from several community members that media was, you know, kind of was reaching out to directly to residents of Little Earth and stuff. They're really uncomfortable with that. And they felt, you know, they're vulnerable there, you know, and then who knows when the shooting's actually going to stop, they're more retaliatory gun battles, who knows? But they don't want to really be out there in public, you know, and so they were looking to organizational leadership here through Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, our Metro Leadership Forum, to kind of step in. And I think that was a really good and interesting request. And, you know, sometimes there's dynamics between sort of grassroots and leadership and who's doing what and everything. But I felt like that was a really powerful understanding and acknowledgement that, you know, people like me who are in organizational leadership and people in the community who sometimes, there's sometimes a disconnect. And we really are all in this, and it's just so very indigenous that everyone was respecting everyone's roles and responsibilities to each other. And I just think, again, this is a really painful time here, but I do think that good things can come of it.
Well, Robert, I know you're on air tonight. You have a big celebration with your family and your husband, and I really appreciate you talking to our listeners during this time of need. So hopefully we got you for just one more, right?
Yep, I'll stay for sure. Thanks. Yep.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and with Haley Cherry and Robert Lilligan, President and CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in Minneapolis. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Development Institute, or NACD, in Minneapolis.
Hey, we were here with our friend Robert Lilligren, President and CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, and really appreciate you spending time with us. This is such a crucial time, and I know we here at Native Roots Radio try to get the word out, and I can't think of any better person to talk about this than you, so appreciate you being on, Robert.
That's very kind. Miigwech. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Haley. It's always a pleasure to be here, and it is. It feels like an inflection point here, right? And our community isn't unfamiliar with the kind of violence that we faced the last 2 days here. And I feel like the response is different. It's less about anger and less about what are you outside interests going to do for us, but it's more about how are we as a community going to come together, going to be with each other as Indigenous people and move on in a more powerful way from this.
You know, it's interesting, too, and I'm kind of paraphrasing from the first speaker that spoke and how she was really emotional about that we need to protect our family, our little ones, our elders. But us elders, it was almost a call to action, too. Us elders need to reach out to these troubled people and get them back in the circle.
Agree. And, you know, something that came out of today's conversation, we had mostly elders. All elders that were the cultural carriers, spiritual participants. And I heard that message too, Robert, from several people. And one of our cultural carriers, Brian Hart, Two-Spirit, brought his pipe, right? And did this very beautiful and appropriate pipe ceremony. And it just fit in so well. And afterward, I was talking to Brian, who I really respect and have known for a long time. And I was glad they did a pipe ceremony. We don't do that a lot in public, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I wonder if we should call on pipe carriers in the community to come together regularly and use our pipes. And he was really enthusiastic, and he's been talking about this for a while, and whether it's monthly or quarterly or whatever. So now we're gonna explore this idea of doing a sort of a community pipe ceremony regularly. And many orgs, our org for sure, NACD, will put resources behind this. But more importantly, I think there's a strong community interest and benefit to doing it. Because as one of the elders said, and I can't remember who it was, if we don't exercise our ways and use them, then they'll disappear, right? So yeah. Let's do pipe ceremony.
Geez, the last time I was in any pipe ceremony, it was with Clyde Belcourt in the Badlands. And so I look forward to that. And that's a grand and great idea. And the power of putting the pipe together is just something that us natives really, really try to understand and appreciate.
I agree. And then there's several fires going in the community. Of course, the fires for our relatives who were killed and who died, but also fires, community fires, right? There's a fire at Little Earth, a fire at All Nations Church, and a fire at the Indian Center. And so this is this opportunity to come in together in this very important spiritual and communal way.
Yeah. So what else do you take out of this? Because I always love to talk about call of action. And I know we talked a little bit about reaching our troubled youth and getting them back in the circle. That's a real vague statement. There's specific things that we can do. But what else can we do? What else is a good and the pipe and the pipe ceremony? That's a great call to action. What else can we do as natives and allies in the community?
That's such a good question. There's so much going on here right now, right? I mean, we're really fortunate as an urban Indian community to have so many deep and meaningful relationships. And so I think what you said, you know, engage. There's some incredible groups, the Indigenous Protectors Movement, Many Shields, Women Warrior Society, that are really right there. I did notice that it was the Indigenous Protectors who were there at Cedarfield Park where the ceremony took place, doing all the cleanup and things, you know, just kind of step in. And it's that relationship-based thing. And it's one-to-one, right? And for me, you know, we kind of had our calendars clear today because we expected to be doing celebratory Indian One stuff all day. But tomorrow's another day, right? And so there's been all this conversation, are we canceling this meeting, are we canceling that meeting? You know, we have all these kind of important gatherings with people who control resources that can help our community. And my feeling is keep moving, right? We need the best thing we can do for our relatives and to honor those who walked on is to continue to try to build a better world. Mm. And so, you know, tomorrow I have a full day, and that's just fine. And a lot of people do. And so that's, you know, and then the other thing, and I feel like this is a lesson to be learned, and I know I just said this, but in our community, you know, based on our colonized, imposed mentality of scarcity, we so often want to tear each other down, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like an event like this, tragic, and people are really respecting each other's roles in the community, supporting each other. I think that's essential, and I feel like it's very Indigenous. I haven't really felt it this strong since the horrible sculpture, the scaffold at the Walker Arts Center sculpture, right? The community came together in kind of the same way. And it's like, okay, radical activists, you do this. Okay, artists, you do this. Okay, you know, governance people, you do this. And we all had one message, right? Bring it down. And I feel like this is a moment like that, where if we can come together as a community around one thought, one objective, one message, and even in our disagreement, respect each other's ways of advancing that message.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I feel like since Standing Rock, the Seven Fires that went from there have really, really talked to that, what you're saying, and really have, in the most part, really have grounded community together. I know, you know, we go back and forth sometimes, but I think all in all, it's really strong. And I saw a lot of strong people there that are doers and do things on the side that don't need, you know, big fanfare. And that's always great to see these people too.
I agree, Robert. And I also agree that Standing Rock and Ochitukoi and the Seven Council Fires of Standing Rock were a pivot point for me, for sure. And just spending a short time there in the peaceful and prayerful community I learned something. And then I came back here, you know, understanding, you know, we can go backward to go forward. We can base progress on our traditional practices and values. And that was just a really real life example of that. And I have felt since then that we're still living on that, right? We're still advancing that. And I think what's happening here right now, still kind of chaotic. I've been getting a bunch of texts while we're talking, and I can't stop and look at them. But there's been progress in the criminal investigations around these shootings. And I feel like we as a community can really hold tight or not, right? We have a lot of choice. There's a lot about that, freedom of choice today in the elders' comments. You know, we have a choice. We can come together and grow from this, or we can just continue the way we've been.
I'm wondering, is there anything that you can share to our listening audience where we're at with the investigation? That's
I can't without going into my text, which I'm already on kind of rickety technology here. and I usually just hear things 2 seconds before the rest of the world. So but I think the center of what I picked up just from what I've seen is a lot of this, although maybe not all of it, is Native on Native violence.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I think this is where our learning moment is. We can't keep doing the colonizers' work for them.
Yeah. Wow. That's a great statement right there. Robert, anything else? We got a minute left here, and I know there's a lot of great things that are happening on the avenues particularly, but also in Indian country that you know, we're resisting a lot of things and doing good work.
You know, I agree so much. And what I'm trying to do is to really embrace our community joy. And this is American Indian Month. And we have a month long of events. I mean, important ones, you know, but also just coming together. And how do we get back to that, you know, in a way that respects our relatives and what has happened, but that doesn't let a few people's violent actions steal our community joy. And so I want to encourage, we're all trying to figure this out. Can we just go back to partying tomorrow? Or how do we add meaning and progress to this month that's very important to us here? So just trying to figure that out, but I would stay close to Facebook pages and websites for Metropolitan Area of Indian Directors or Native American Community Development Institute, where you'll see there's stuff planned every day for this month. And my hope is that we can come together as community and grow and not disrupt this important month to us here in Minnesota.
Well, I'll leave you with it. Always gets the darkest before sunrise, and I feel like this is always a pivotal point in our community.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, Robert, thank you so much for coming on, and especially with the celebration that we cut you off on, and give our best to the retirement party, and appreciate.
My husband retired this week, so I was at a retirement party for my husband.
Right. Robert's not retiring. No. All right. Pini Gigi. Thank you, Robert. And we'll see you in a few weeks.
All right.
All right. Thanks. Hey, we'll be right back. Native Roots Radio.
Throughout the month of May, KFAI celebrates American Indian Month with Turtle Island Voices Rising. Tune in Monday, May 5th from 8 a.m. to noon to hear special community programming exploring Indigenous Renaissance, featuring Deanna Standing Cloud, Jamie Edwards, Lisa Howes, Alfred Walking Bull, and Robert Lilligren. You can find out more information about this year's Turtle Island Voices Rising by visiting kfai.org.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we are here with our relative here, Arvina Martin, Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin. And Arvina, before we get to Stockbridge, we need to talk a little bit about the word of the day. And I just have a statement on that, and that's Machaohurus, which means a place where you take blue clay from, and that's what they call the Twin Cities.
Can you say that again? Machaohurus?
Macha. M-A-H. Macha. Machaohurus.
Machaohurus.
Machaohurus. Yeah.
Place Yay, where like you that. Take blue clay from. Yeah. So there must be blue clay amongst our 15,000 lakes here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So somewhere in the Twin Cities, it's a bunch of blue clay.
Yeah.
Maybe along the rivers, probably. Arvina, we didn't pick a Ho-Chunk word today, so it's kind of a free-for-all. If you can say one of your favorite ones, one of the words that I learned recently was waka-chunk, and that means sacred. Oh. So, yeah, anytime I see, like, an eagle flying, now I'm like, oh, that's so waka-chunk, like, so sacred. Right. But, yeah.
And Day Waka-Chunk is the name of Devil's Lake here in Wisconsin. So,
Is that the lake by the powwow grounds? What lake is over there by?
But it's by Baraboo.
Oh, okay. I was thinking about that lake that's kind of hidden from the powwow grounds.
Is that Lake Arbutus?
In Black River?
Yeah.
I think that might be Arbutus. Yeah, and now I know where to go when these hot powwows hit me, is to go to the lake and do a swim and come back.
Yeah, just come take a dip. Yeah, preferably get your regalia off first. You don't want to have wet regalia.
You don't want to be like one of those things that are on a fishing rod. What are those called? Jiggers? Or you don't want to be
come off as a...
Yeah, that too.
Have you been to Devil's Lake, Arvina?
I'm sorry?
Have you been to Devil's Lake in Wisconsin?
I have been. I feel like we used to go there for like school field trips and stuff, and I've been out there to recreate and to, you know, it's a really pretty area for hiking and swimming. You know, it's gorgeous. It's easy to see why our ancestors thought it a very power, you know, found it to be a very powerful place. You know, it's beautiful and almost, you know, looks a little otherworldly with the rest of Wisconsin. You know, you kind of have a stereotype as to what Wisconsin looks like, and to have this area with all this beautiful lake with like rocky outcrops and everything is maybe not part of that stereotype you have, but it is a very important place to us. And you know, settlers heard Tewakanchunk and heard Sacred Lake, and they turned it into Devil's Lake because, you know, if it's sacred and it's not Jesus sacred, then it's the devil.
Wow. Jeez. You're not even close to being as old as me. You're young enough to be my daughter, but do you feel like there are so many more eagles now than when you were younger?
I feel like I see a lot of bigger birds. A lot, like more than I saw them when I was a kid, whether it's eagles, hawks, I feel like I see more often. And I've kind of wondered if it was just because I finally saw some and, like, you know, you then you notice it, or if there are more. I'm not sure. I know that the eagle population has rebounded since banning of DDT.
Right.
And so, you know, it would make sense that there are more eagles around. Birds of prey, you know, we have an owl that lives us that we find very off-putting.
Yes.
So just try to be like, okay.
Don't look them in the eye. You know what that means.
No, like, we're not here to hurt you. Leave us alone.
Well, I know I'm 63. I'll be 64 in a couple weeks. And I never saw eagles when I was young. I see them all over now.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. I do think that there's more, and that is a result of of public policy doing something based in science that is for the good of a species, and a species that means a lot to us as Americans, not just as Native people, but as Americans too. And you know, again, this was science. This was evidence-based research that could be repeated. And effective communication that got lawmakers to see what was happening, and people that were either policymakers or, you know, in the case of like elected lawmakers, or people that were, you know, executing policy and putting into policy in place as, you know, the Department of Natural Resources and such.
Right.
So, I mean, this is the kind of lawmaking that we are not seeing right now. And that's a shame, and I think that you know, we're going to see the detriment as things go, whether it is, you know, less money for sciences, less money for disease research, you know, less money in tracking things like COVID and bird flu. I think it's just going to have nothing but negative impacts on us going forward, and our communities, and people are going to be less safe and less healthy.
Absolutely. Well, you know, just switching gears a little bit, you know how we always talk about, and it means different things to different people. It isn't specifically physically getting land back, but in this case with Stockbridge Muncie Band, it is getting land back.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I am Stockbridge Muncie through my dad's side, and the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians has purchased a plot of land. It's about 372 acres of land, and it is in western Massachusetts. It's the northern slope of a place called Monument Mountain, and that is an area that holds special meaning to Stockbridge people. It is a sacred space for Stockbridge Muncie folks, for Stockbridgers in particular. And this is part of that, you know, it's kind of a land back moment. You know, the tribe did purchase it. So, you know, it was not just given free will, free accord, but the tribe was able to purchase it and will likely be going through, you know, processes of land management, et cetera, because the tribe is now responsible for the natural resource management on the mountain. So, I believe the Stockbridge Muncie Nation is beginning environmental studies to see what, you know, the health of the area is, what it needs to be brought back to full health, and you know, what can be done to protect protect the sacred lands, and sacred lands so far from the lands on which the Stockbridge Muncie Reservation now resides. Stockbridge Muncie were two tribes. The Stockbridger Mohicans were from western Massachusetts through New York City, and had land and in those areas, and when we're forced west, were kind of hooked up with the Muncie tribe of you know, in the Midwest, and they kind of came together and formed one community when they're really two tribes.
Mm-hmm. And Shannon Housley, is she president of the Wisconsin branch?
Yes, Shannon Housley is the president of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican Indians. She is a tremendous leader. She's someone I'd like to get into Emerge someday. She's a really thoughtful leader, and she's very intelligent and is really good at looking at all sides of an issue to make sure that the decision she's making is going to be one that serves the most people.
It's interesting, too, that she's been around a long time as president. And I think don't they do hold their elections like every year? So she has to get reelected every year. Is that right?
I don't think so. I can't remember what the cycle is, but I do think she has a 4-year term.
Okay, because I tried to look that up. She's been on our show many times and pretty good friends with her and, you know, with my other job. That's ending soon here in another 2 months, and I'll be a civilian like everybody else here. Oh, wow.
You can join me in the former electeds club.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Well, hey, I got to hear a little bit on our notes here that your uncle, is that Truman Lowe by any chance?
Yep.
Wow. Let's talk a little about his work. And, you know, and it's featured in many, his work's featured in many museums, including the Smithsonian National Museum of American Indians, which I've been to a few times.
Yeah, there's going to be a retrospective as to his career and his work at the Smithsonian this fall. We are really trying to make plans to go out there so we can be a part of the opening ceremonies. Actually, his daughter is the one that I'm staying with right now in Berkeley. Wow. And so we've been talking about, you know, the work that goes into putting in a retrospective of the you know, amount for a lot, the career that he had, which was quite long. And, you know, he had such an impact on people's conceptions of what Native art was supposed to look like and was kind of a new voice in contemporary Native art and has influenced, you know, countless other Native artists. He was actually even the curator of contemporary arts at the NMAI as well, and he put together shows for, you know, Robert Morrison and Fritz Scholder, who are two contemporary Native artists as well. So, you know, he did a lot for Native art, and he was a wonderful human being, one of the funniest people I've ever known. And he's just fabulous.
Right on. Hey, Arvina, we're going to talk more about your uncle on another show, but I appreciate you so much for being on, and you're so busy. And say a hi to the former vice president for us.
I sure will. Thank you so much for having me.
Right on. We'll see you soon. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after the short break.
Oh-ho! This is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka Hicha Wicha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we have our friend Christy Goforth, Executive Director, Bikes for Kids Wisconsin, and there's a big annual sale coming up. But Christy, before we get into that, Haley and I, yes, it's hard to believe we do prep the show and do talk. I know it's hard to believe, but... we were wondering a little bit about your tribe and a little bit up there. And Haley's a big camper, and she wants to know how she can go up there and camp.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. You know, have you guys ever been to Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan? Or Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario?
No.
Oh, yeah. No. It is water country. So you've got to be, you know, ready to get in the water. You're going to be fishing. You're going to be... ice fishing in the winter. I grew up ice fishing. I often joke that I was born in an ice shanty, but not quite, but almost. My CB handle when I was a kid was Fisher Baby. So it was all about fishing. but yeah, it's beautiful up there. And I spend a lot of time on Mackinac Island as well. So we all kind of bop around a lot of the islands over there. I grew up on Drummond Island. And you know, Sugar Island is a huge part of our tribe, and it's a beautiful, beautiful area. You've got to make time for it.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds cool, Haley.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to get up there. Thank you for that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
There's some beautiful dunes. It's gorgeous, but it is always pretty cool. So, you know, bring layers.
layers. Yes.
Wow, cool. Well, Christy, great to see you again. Before we get really into the bike's annual sale, let's talk a little bit about, for the people who are just kind of listening in for the first time, a little bit about Bikes for Kids Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And thanks, Dennis, for the shout out. Sault Ste. Marie is gorgeous, and that whole area is just God's country. It's beautiful. I'm the executive director of Bikes for Kids Wisconsin, and we're basically on this two-wheeled revolution to get people on bikes, and not just all the people who've always had bikes, but especially the communities, the populations of people who've been historically excluded from this industry. And there's a lot of folks we've found out through this work. So one of the programs we offer is our bike giveaway program, which we just surpassed 13,000 bicycles distributed in the state of Wisconsin since our first bike giveaway in 2017. And so that's just been incredible work. And about 96% in 2024, 96% of our recipients are people of color, 2% were people with disabilities, and about 40% are first generation bike owners, if you can believe that. So no one in their family had owned a bike before. So, and then we have a bike work program, and we accept, so I'm here in my bike shop for people who are watching. I thought I'd change it up from my boring office. We offer a community bike disposal program too. So we make sure all those bikes aren't going into landfills and they're responsibly recycled.
What an amazing program. And also, we're going to have you on here today because we want to talk about every bike's annual sale on May 10th. And then if you're still on next segment, I want to grill you about your TikTok too. Oh, wow.
All right, I'm in. Yeah, we right have on Saturday, May 10th, we've got our big annual sale. So it's called the Everything Bikes Annual Sale. And it really is probably the largest used bike sale in southern Wisconsin. And you know, I always have to be careful saying that. It honestly is probably the largest used bike sale in the state of Wisconsin. It's just I don't know that for sure. But we've got right now behind me about 1,500 bikes, so we'll be selling at that sale. But it's everything related to bikes. You know, right now my laptop is set up on some bike bags because I had to get the right angle. So we got lots of bags. I'm standing here amidst a bunch of fenders. So we've got fenders. We've got all kinds of racks. These are kind of cool racks. So you could just put this right on your seat stem, and you know, you can take it off easily. So you can strap your backpack to that. We've got fleets of folding bikes. We've got parts, shoes, clothes, accessible bikes, car racks, hitch racks, you name it. And you can find it here. Bike trailers, tag along, trainers, it goes on. So, yeah, so that's Saturday, May 10th.
So do you have any like helmets too with like Green Bay Packer insignias on?
I don't have any Packer. I really need to get that, don't I? Or some stickers?
No. Some Vikings stickers. Helmet, purple.
Yeah. I am wearing a purple shirt, Rob. Not Robert.
That's so. Right on. Well, you don't know how important a fender is until you ride your bike and when it's raining.
Oh, yeah. And you got that stripe up the back. That's always popular, especially when you're in high school or middle school. All kids will love that.
Let's talk more about this. This is just an amazing, I mean, look at all those bikes, Haley. This is just amazing how this has grown over the years and how you help the community and how, you know, when we hear people don't have, a unicycle.
We got it all, I tell you.
People don't have accessibility to this. It's a big, big deal.
It absolutely is. And I'll tell you, you know, on a weekly basis, we have people come into our shop where, someone smashed their car in the night. It was parked on the street, right? They smashed their car. They come out for work. Now their car is disabled. They can't get to work and they don't have the luxury of having a job where they get time off. They might be a waitress, you know, or some kind of essential worker. And so, they have to get there. They can't call in sick. And so we'll often have them coming in and they're just in crisis and you can feel the stress and they need a bike badly. And in Madison, and I know in the Twin Cities as well, we have cities that have prioritized our bike infrastructure. making it pretty reasonable for people to, you know, ride a bike. And the riding season is getting longer. We have 70 degrees in November, and we also have 70 degree days in February. So winter is getting shorter. Oh, boy, I just bumped some fenders there. Winter's getting shorter. This is one of our jokes is that one of our staff people is going to come in and find just a pair of legs sticking out from a mountain of bicycles, kind of like Wizard of Oz style in the House of Bikes. But it's really essential. It's low cost. It's so good for us in so many ways. And I'd love to segue a little to talking about how important it is for everyone to teach your kids or your grandkids, whoever it be, teach them how to ride a bike. We're getting so many requests for that right now. And the success rate, unfortunately, when we're older is much, much lower.
You know, one of the things, and maybe it's too controversial to say, but I've heard that it's almost better to have the young ones without training wheels where they have the bike with the where they just use walk as opposed to the training wheels. Have we talked about that, Christy?
We might have touched on that, and I got all that stuff ready because I wanted to make an X with these training wheels just to say no to training wheels. Okay. And what you're talking about right there, Robert, is this kind of a bike right here. So see that, how it has the pedals, a strider bike, a balance bike. These are so fun to watch the little kids get going on, because after a little while, they are just flying on these. And I've seen people where they don't even realize they don't have pedals. They think that they're zooming because they have pedals, but they're just zooming because they're going so, so fast. And when it comes, just on Saturday, actually, we had a mom with 5 kids come in for their bikes. And there were 4 kids that knew how to ride and a little 4-year-old who didn't. And so I was telling the mom, kind of telling her some tips on learning to ride. And I said, you know what? Why don't we just go outside and do it right now? And so Amaya was her name. And I was like, are you ready to do this? And she's like, yes, I can do it. And so we all get out there. Her siblings are all cheering her on, supporting her. And, you know, and so I'm just teaching her some of the basic things. And like, you really got to mitigate the fear. And so often when she's starting on 2 wheels with pedals. But she'd had a balance bike. And so that made all the difference because she had the mechanics of steering. She couldn't figure out how to use the brakes, the coaster brakes. That was the hardest part. But really it's just having her put her feet on the pedals, and I hold the bike and then I let go and I yell feet down. And we do that 10 times. So it's a mantra in her head. So when she knows that bike is still, she's got to get her feet down to the ground. And we put the seat a little lower than it should be. So her legs are a little bit bent and she feels very comfortable. And so that's starting it. And so within 15 minutes, she was riding. Her siblings were all cheering her on. And I heard her way down the street go, feet down. I was like, yes, Amaya, that's it. Feet down.
Wow,
yeah, someone's commenting here. Matt, my oldest was able to ride a pedal bike at 2. Yes, both of my kids learned at age 3. You know, balance is a spectrum. Every kid's got slightly different motor development skills. But yeah, I like a tricycle at age 1, 2. The tricycle teaches the pedaling motion, the braking, the steering. And then you can go to that strider bike and then, you know, put them on 2 wheels.
That's amazing. I have a quick question too that I've loaned out my bike, but one of the things I'm going to get it back. One of the things is, can you talk about a lock? What kind of lock do we prefer and how we lock these up?
Yeah. It's really important to invest in a good lock. If you care about your bike and you want, you know, we say that to people, if you're going to be really disappointed if that bike is gone, invest in a good lock. So some of the locks are actual chain link locks and they're covered with a fabric sleeve. And that can be a combo lock or a keyed lock. Those are great. They run probably about $40. Some of the locks we sell here, actually, they're a U-lock and they come with an insurance policy. So if your bike gets stolen, you get up to $1,500 if someone were to break that lock. So you just really got to be careful about the skinny, thin cable locks. There's a $12 pocket tool. We have plenty of them here for cutting cables, and it's very easy to do.
Yeah, Matt is on a roll here. We really appreciate Matt. He said, do you take donations? And I guess that's also bike donations and money donations. How can people all over the civic media and the Twin Cities here support you?
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, we take both of those, financial donations. We need money to buy the parts and to have the staff to do the work and to pay for this ginormous warehouse that we're in. And bike donations. So really every bike that rolls through the door is of value in some way. Even if we can't save that bicycle, you can bet we're going to take the pedals off. We're going to take maybe the grips off, the handlebars, the fork. We're going to take whatever we can off. We're in this 12,000 square foot warehouse, and we don't have a dumpster here because we reuse so many of the parts. So we've got an amazing circular economy going on. But people can take bike donations. We have a site in Neenah, Wisconsin. So that's in the Fox Valley. So if you go to our website, bikesforkidswi.org, and hit the contact page, you'll see that address. And then we take them here in Madison, Wisconsin, year-round, all the time. Same with Neenah. And then we've got some people who do host pop-up bike donation drives for us. And we'll have one in Milwaukee this fall as well.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. Hey, we have Christy Goforth, Executive Director of Bikes for Kids in Wisconsin. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what's happening and how you guys out there listening can help. This is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back.
Programming is supported by the Vail Museum's Year of Earth. From April 26, 2025 to April 26, 2026, join us for a program that highlights ways Minnesota is changing, how people across the state are taking action to foster a better tomorrow, and learn what you can do to help. Event details at bailmuseum.ufm.edu.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
In this portion of the show, we like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunts.
No! We'll get you to howl next time, Shelly, now that we surprised that on you. Oh, wow.
Yeah, hey, yeah, she told me I would love to do that.
Oh, well, next time. Next time.
We just have
next
to get time. You
by. Okay, hey, we're here with Shelly Buck, president of Ouaminiyomini Okodayapi.
Ooh, nice, Robert.
Do I give myself the applause here?
Yeah.
Okay. Whoa.
Good job.
Don't have me do it again. Hey, let's talk a little. Until the next time, let's talk a little bit about what some of the things that you're going to be doing this summer and maybe part of this month too. What kind of celebrations and tours are happening?
Well, we've started our tour season up. We offer interpretive tours. There are set dates. You can go on our website and sign up for them. Our first one actually is this weekend. Saturday, May 3rd at 9 a.m. Unfortunately, because of the Stone Arch Bridge work that's happening on our side of the river, we are having to do our tours on the other side of the river. So people will be meeting at Father Hennepin Park, and it'll be a 1-hour tour that they learn about the importance of the area, Dakota culture there, what the area was like before the falls were harnessed for their power or for their economic resources. And it's a great time. Everybody loves the tours. Barry does such a great job with them. People learn so much. I've never met someone who has so much knowledge about so many different areas, but they'll really understand how Dakota people stewarded the land before with our traditional ways, and how we're connected to the area and the water, and not only at Ouaminiyomini, but even further down river. And it's a great learning experience for people. And like I said, Barry does a great job, and people can sign up. We also do provide tours for organizations, different groups, sometimes schools. There is a small charge, but people can reach out for those, and we can try to get those set up as well.
Well, again, and then that's off your website. We can give that out again.
Yes, awamniomni.org. You can sign up for the interpretive tours. The interpretive tours are free if you sign up for the dates that are predetermined. So anybody can come and join and learn a little bit about the area. Some people have lived there their whole lives and didn't know what they learned on the tours. So it's a pretty great time for everyone to learn.
As a Dakota person, what surprised you the most about that area that you went, oh, I didn't know that, or maybe a reaffirmation of something you did know and that was brought up?
Yeah, sadly, federal policies worked with some things. I didn't know a lot about the area. Obviously, being from Prairie Island, our reservation is further south along the Mississippi, or Hahawakpa. So I didn't know a lot about the Minneapolis area and the importance. I knew there were important sites. I just didn't know exactly where. Obviously, I knew Nicollet Island or Wita Washite. I knew that was a very important site for our people. But it wasn't until I became part of the Native Partnership Council with the then Friends of the Falls that I really learned about the site and was almost embarrassed. I didn't know more. But I think it's really, I've learned so much. And knowing that there was another island there that was sacred to our people called Witawanaki or Spirit Island, it was destroyed and harvested for her limestone to build the city around it. Mm. It's sad to see some of the old photos of what she looked like. And there's like different photos at different time periods of her being harvested and destroyed for her limestone. And now to know that she's no longer there. And even though the falls have been desecrated, they were 1,250, over 1,250 feet wide. They're about a third of the size now. And then, of course, Witawanaki being totally destroyed. Even though those things have been destroyed, that power, that life force is still there. And we can see that life force in the natural life that's there.
Right.
I think it was last year we saw two of our Sinkpe or muskrat relatives back in the area. So that was exciting to see that life is already coming back.
That's amazing. So in the future, are you thinking of publishing a book about this, a companion book of all your work, but also the way it used to be and the way it's going to be?
We haven't really talked about a book per se. We have talked about how the process worked because, you know, we're a Dakota-led organization. We're working with the city, the Minneapolis Park and Rec Board, and the four Dakota tribes here in the state of Minnesota. And it's a kind of a weird partnership and dynamic to have all those different groups working together. And we changed kind of the way that the process happens. Normally with a construction project like this, you have the design and engineering team that might bring in a traditional knowledge keeper here and there, meet with them a few times, take the knowledge that they get, check the box, give them a small little stipend, and never talk to them again. And when I came into this project, I wanted to make sure that our knowledge, it's not something you can just read from books. Mm-hmm. These are things that people have brought up with, taught by their elders, passed down from elders before and so on, that's valuable knowledge that those design and engineer teams can't get anywhere else. So those traditional knowledge keepers are going to be at the center of the project from the start to the finish. And they're not going to get just some little stipend. They're going to get paid just like any other subcontractor would for their knowledge and their work. And it wasn't easy. We knew there were going to be bumps in the road, but we worked through them, and I think we've really been able to show people that it can be done. And I was worried when we put out the RFP request that contractors would balk at this idea. Mm. We had 10 people who put in bids. We interviewed five of them, and every single one thanked us for doing that. They were excited to see how we structured it. And obviously, some of these knowledge keepers have college degrees. Some may have just a high school degree.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic, please.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, it's bursting with ultrasonic.